on gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Bill Rock. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock Friday morning. Mr. Mayor, hello and good morning to you.
Good morning. It was warmer this morning than I thought it was going to be.
Did you have your overcoat ready to go?
You're
tough.
In the
you
car.
Don't wear a coat much.
Generally not, because I get in the subway or I get in the car. And
you could get sick, you know. I mean,
I will take a flu shot this year, and you should too. People who it was recommended for, thank you for the segue into that. Everyone 6 months of age or older, but especially important for some groups. Now, one of the groups don't qualify, pregnant women. Another one, children under five.
Elderly.
There I qualify. People 50 and older, it's really important. And if you have some, you know, breathing problems or chronic health conditions, you really should talk to your doctor. But it's really important for healthy school children of any age.
You can get them almost anywhere now.
You know, last
CVS's
year,
I
got it at
Duane
Reade or CVS. We'll do some next week. I don't know. We'll stage something probably for the cameras. But, you know, you can get them any place. And it literally, you don't even know that. It's in this day and age, the technology, you don't even know. People say, does it hurt?
If you close your eyes and talk to somebody.
You would not know that. That's exactly right.
No, I've had them as well. So stay well.
And you too.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, I want to be here next week. I don't have to do the show myself. I'd ask myself questions and answer them.
Think how easy it would be.
I'm not sure.
All right. Speaking of tough questions, the tough question continues with the crowd next door over at Zuccotti Park. They're tonight having, family get-together night. It's like Parents' Weekend.
The neighbors are really
not happy.
I talked to a guy the other day, has a building, he's got 3 or 4 tenants, and they want to cancel their leases. Now, I don't know if they can or that they're really serious about it, but there's a lot of noise and other stuff. And it's a balance. The Constitution gives you the right to assemble, the right to protest. I would argue it also gives you the right to not assemble or protest, and you don't want to take away those people's rights and dissenting views, and there's a balance between that and reasonable restrictions so that the neighbors aren't, you know, drumming doesn't exactly, I don't know whether a judge would say that is a part of protesting, but, you know, a lot of people say that kids can't sleep at night and that sort of thing. So we'll eventually have to work something out here.
Has there been any movement along those lines of working something out, whatever
means? Well, it's a little bit complicated by there's nobody to work it out with. You know, there just is not any one group, one ideology, one objective, one person to negotiate with. And there's something to be said, some good in that and some bad in that, but it makes it hard to do that. I think if you look at history, some people lose interest. Some people find other ways to make their point. Some people decide that what I think should happen is let's go create the jobs that people need rather than complain that they don't. Let's go help those industries that we need to generate tax revenues so we can have good services, police, fire, correction, sanitation, education. It's a little bit disconcerting to see some people whose livelihood depends on the industries that they're trying to tear down. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But we'll get through this.
And
in all fairness, the crowds, when they have moved other places, have been very peaceful. You know, there's not been any of the kind of craziness you see elsewhere. You may not like it, but these people have generally obeyed the law. And, technically, Brookfield has not asked them to leave. So they're not trespassing, so the police can't do anything about it.
And that's the rock and the hard place that...
Well, it's different than a city park. In a city park, we have
rules.
You can't camp, you can't stay past a curfew, and we would enforce those rules. And I think the protesters know that when they go to a city park. There's no argument. Police say it's time to go. They go. But this is different. This is a private piece of property where the owner made an agreement with the city to be open 24/7. The judge, we think, would support that and say, yes, they have to do it. And then the question, and they have a right to put in their own rules, but the question is, when do you do it and how do you do it and what do you do if a lot of people don't like it?
The governor yesterday announced that Joe Lota is going to be the head of the MTA.
Competent guy, did a good job when he worked for Mayor Giuliani. He's been working for Madison Square Garden or
Cablevision.
Cablevision, one of the, some combination thereof.
All I guess it's cable. Yeah.
Well, it isn't. I think they spun it off, but and he's a very competent guy. I thought it was a good choice by the governor. It's somebody who can hit the ground running. He certainly, he might not know all of the details of the MTA, but he certainly knows how things work in New York City and how Albany works, which is a very important part. And the parts that he doesn't know, he'll get just smart enough to get some advice right away.
I was talking with Governor Christie this week, and we got into the whole transportation thing, and he mentioned that he would like to see, or there are discussions continuing, about extending the number 7 line over to New Jersey underneath.
Well, that was one of the proposals that was advanced when he canceled the
Arc Tunnel.
It goes to a different, would go to a different part of New Jersey, so it's not exactly comparable. You know, whether it makes some sense, I don't know. If there's money for it and it makes sense, I'd certainly support it. The number 7 extension that we're taking all the way down the west side is, keep in mind, done with New York City, not New York State money. The state didn't give us anything. But it's on time and on budget, roughly. And in all fairness to the MTA, they're building it. So it's done with city money, but they're doing it, and they've done a great job.
Then why did they have, I don't know if you read the article this week, that the East Side Access Tunnel is now going to be delayed to 2018 or something. And, again, an MTA project that has just fallen off the
rails. Well, but that's not because of the design or the construction. That's just lack of money, if I understand it.
Well, I think there's some lack of money, but also some management issues as well.
Well, that may be. I'm not familiar. But I just tell you this. If you want facilities, if you want more subways, you want faster service, you want better buses that go more places and that sort of thing, you have to have money to pay for it. And I vaguely remember, it's probably 5 years ago now, maybe even six, somebody had an idea that what we should do is toll cars to get them to people to leave their cars home, use the money to enhance mass transit so people have a better alternative than taking their cars, and everyone would be happy. And if you go back and take a look and you think where we would be today if that had passed, and my recollection, could be wrong, but I don't think so, every editorial board was in favor of it, every good government group, every union, I'm sure the press will find one, but virtually everybody. The polls were in favor of it by the time we got done, and it just got hung up in Albany, who said, we've got a better idea. And what they did is they put in a tax, payroll tax, basically, I don't know what it's called, and which I gather is not popular, particularly outside of New York City, as a better alternative. There's nothing else the city could do. The mass transit is so important to our growth. You'd have so many more jobs if you had better mass transit. We'd have more tax revenues so we could pay our municipal employees more. I mean, everybody would have been a winner. And it's, if Albany wants to take it up, they don't need us to go fight the battle. You know what to do. And you should toll all the bridges, all the entrances to the city, so that it is as a disincentive to people to drive, but don't use the money for general budget balancing. That's the,
build the trains and buses.
Right. What we do is we have lotteries. The money's supposed to go for education. It just doesn't go for education. They say, yeah, all right, here, this dollar's going for education, but then they take a dollar away the other side. Government's got to set priorities. It's going to be painful this year in the city, as well as every other level of government. We're going to have to set priorities. We're going to say more here, less there.
All right, I want to talk to you about that in more detail in just a second. Let me, speaking of money, take a break right here. If you would like to ask Michael Bloomberg a question.
From hey, I run from prejudice, I run from pessimism, but I run too late.
That's Lady Adebellum, and I Run to You on Modern Country Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling Show. You like country music, Mr. Mayor?
I do like country music.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Good fun music.
I mean, I'm back in the Minnie Pearl days of
country
music. Well,
that's the Minnie Pearl. You know. My goodness gracious. Yeah, you are ratcheting it back.
I always loved the price tag hanging down.
Oh, my goodness. You talked about the budget and next year's budget. I want to ask you to comment in that light about what kind of pressures you're going to have and the state's going to have in light of this jobs bill from Washington that they're arguing about endlessly. That's going to create the same situation you had with that stimulus money the first and second.
Well, that's
time,
one
right?
of the problems. If government, you know, Washington thinks they're doing you a favor by giving you you money for 1 year, but unless it's recurring. It's irrational to go and make long-term commitments with monies that you know are going to be there only once. And yet there's an enormous pressure to do that. Jobs, and once people have a job, it's, you know, you got to be sympathetic. You don't want, nobody wants to get fired. You don't want to have to go fire people. But if you ratchet up in good times, you have an intolerable situation in bad times. And if you just look at the politics in Washington, it does not look likely that there's going to be much stimulus money that's voted and coming. And I do think if they do have stimulus money for education, it's the opportunity to tie that money to increasing standards. That's what Arne Duncan's and the president have been fighting for. And to give out money without that, that really is a waste of money.
I had a conversation about New Jersey teachers this week, and I see in the paper this morning the UFT is fighting, pushing back hard as of yesterday on teacher evaluation. It simply comes to, at least to my view, that teachers don't want evaluation.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I think teachers' unions don't want evaluations. There are a lot of teachers who do. Not all, but there are a lot. The problem, in all fairness, is I don't know how you can really evaluate in many cases. In some cases, you can. In esoteric subjects, it's really hard. When it's a teacher, you know, you don't want teachers to say, I don't want to take the most problematic kids into my class because
I can evaluate them.
Sure. I mean, you want teachers that say, this is the toughest challenge anybody's ever put in front of me. I want to go do that. And failure, but someday I'm going to turn that corner and it's going to be a success.
But largesse hasn't worked at all.
There are... I was talking to somebody last night at the Al Smith dinner. They're raising money for some parochial schools, and they spend about $5,000 per kid and about $7,500, I think he said, for high school kids. We spend $18,000 to $19,000 per kid. Now, it's not exactly comparable because we have a lot more special ed kids. Many special ed kids get a dedicated teacher, so the teacher has
sometimes
a class
two,
size of one or sometimes two. And so, you know, that distorts the numbers. But there does not seem to be a great correlation in the in the good research between anything other than teacher quality. Class size does not matter on what people say. It'd be nicer if everybody had their own teacher, I suppose, but that's not the real world. If it's an either-or thing, double the class size and double the quality of the teacher in front of it, and you'll do better than if you cut the class size in half and didn't improve the quality. In New York City, we had, you know, 75,000 teachers, and the vast bulk of them really are some of the best teachers you can get. Are there some deadwood in there? Yeah, nobody's going to have 75,000 of anything without some. And the trick is, how do you figure out who's the deadwood? What a union would argue is due process, and you got to prove that they're not good. They have rights. Other people would say, I don't care about their rights. What about the kid? The kid's not learning, therefore. And it's hard to say that it's anything other than the teacher in front of the room. Teachers will say, well, it's the parents or the home. And that is true. But, you know, we in education, government, we take on the responsibility of educating the kids no matter what their family structure or whether the family even exists. And you've got to go from there. And so it's a battle that is always going to be, I think, the teachers' union always arguing for only seniority being the criteria for pay and for keeping their jobs. And that's not what the system needs. We are falling behind, partially because our schools are not getting better, partially because the rest of the world is now moving ahead.
Right, they've got the resource and the wherewithal.
Right, so I mean, you know, the fact that all of a sudden they have school systems, even their school systems aren't better than ours, but they didn't exist before in many places of the world. And so now all of a sudden, but regardless of what the reason is, in a competitive world, we're falling behind. And the kids that we are graduating or not graduating don't get the education they need. Now, having a high school diploma really means a lot. A lot of people say, oh, but it's not ready for college. Some kids aren't going to college, and some kids maybe don't want to learn or can't learn or whatever. They may have problems, and we can work with them, and you can advance them, but they're not going to go to the top Ivy League school. Nevertheless, and if you don't have a high school diploma, you can't join the Army. You don't have a high school diploma, you can't work in most city agencies. If you don't have a high school diploma, companies won't even give you an interview. So people that say, oh, you haven't improved the school system. That's not true. We used to have a lot of the minority groups, 35% graduation rate. Today it's 65%, numbers like that. So those are improvements. And incidentally, the better schools with the kids who are going to go and win Nobel Prizes, we used to have two, Stuyvesant and Bronx Science. Everybody used to talk about those. Today there's a dozen. U.S. News and World Report, out of the 200 top high schools in the country, public high schools, 13 were in New York City. And the number one New York City one? Staten Island Tech.
I know there's no simple answer to any of these complex questions, otherwise it would be fixed already, but you know as well as anybody that in the city hall, your deputy mayors, they know who the good employees are, the okay employees, and then those that are really questionable. Any manager knows that. I know that here. Why isn't it that in the school system we allow principals to do what they should be doing best?
Well, in the private sector, you do have some legal protections, but fundamentally, you serve at the pleasure of your supervisor. If a supervisor dismisses people irrationally, eventually that catches up. Their boss throws them out,
right?
Or their company goes bankrupt or whatever. The marketplace is the protection. In the public sector, we have civil service laws. And that maybe they probably came in because of real abuses where people just fired people because they didn't like them or wrong party or that sort of thing. But there's no question that in the public sector, that is not something that is generally done. At some levels, it is. Ray Kelly, the top brass, all serve at his pleasure.
I would assume that the deputy mayors all
deputy
serve
mayor?
At your
sure, absolutely. For the vast bulk of city and state and federal employees, there are laws that protect them. It was interesting. I saw an editorial yesterday. I'm trying to remember where it was, talking about Harry Reid saying the private sector is doing fine and creating jobs. The public sector is not. The private sector is not doing fine and creating jobs. Harry's wrong on that. I always liked Harry, but he's just dead wrong there. And in fact, we want more private sector jobs. Yesterday, I was over in Brooklyn, and we had a big announcement. It was great. There's this building built in 1916, million-plus square feet of space on the water as you go down the BQE. It was built by the Navy. It's called Federal Building Number 2. Cute name. It's been empty for 20 years. No electricity, no this, no that. And two guys have a development company. They bought it for $10 or $15 million. And the deal is they've got to, in 2 years, make that building habitable for local small industry, light industry, I think you call it. And if they do, and if there are real jobs in there, then they get some tax breaks. And if there aren't jobs, they don't. But we've got to bring manufacturing back to the city or keep it in the city. And this will really do that. But it's that. And it was interesting. Jerry Nadler was there and he went, he was his biggest supporter of private sector jobs. Now, he's pretty liberal and I assume he would vote for anything for the public sector as well. But you see in this country, a lot of people say, oh, we just can't afford the public sector. I happen to be a big supporter of the public sector in that we want to have good cops and firefighters and teachers and sanitation corrections and that sort of thing. On the other hand, you cannot afford to do what we've been doing. The pension costs are killing us. And as you point out, you cannot make the selections of who's good or bad. Union would say, who are you to decide? I would argue that's the way
that's
the
my
system.
Job, right. That's
right.
The job to be done.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. So, all right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Sit tight for a couple of minutes here. Let's take care of business.
Same. report card for your dollar, and you never pass the blame when it don't go your way. Now I see all these big shots.
Yes, indeed. It is Modern Country Bumper Music Friday. Johnny Rich, one of the best ones, Shutting Down Detroit, the name of that particular song. I bet. Did you see the article in the Times this morning about cab medallions? Two of them traded Wednesday for $1 million.
You know, and the yellow cab industry is screaming about more medallions will ruin their business, and the price keeps going up. If you think about it, when I don't know who put the medallion concept in, but the fact that somebody can get a license from the city and then they benefit by trading it, and the city gets nothing.
Probably you wouldn't design it that way today.
I think that's fair. What we need, and we're working with the governor, we've got to get this bill signed. There's two things. One, selling more medallions will get us $1 billion, which we desperately need.
Let me interrupt and ask you a question. On that $1 million trade, are there sales taxes and transactional taxes?
I assume.
Of some sort?
Yeah, I mean, it must be.
There must be, probably.
You would think so. But we need the $1 billion. And there are 4.5 boroughs, everything north of 96th and Manhattan, and then Staten Island, Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx, that do not have taxi service. This just can't go on. This is an outrage. It has gone on for decades, and it's going to stop right now.
All right. Now, the governor has asked the feds to get into the discussion in Albany.
Well, that's
the,
a separate
handicapped access.
The two really aren't. I mean, people may want to tie them together, but one has nothing to do with the other. I mean, somebody may want to tie the two together to use it, but there's nothing. One has nothing to do with the other. The issue with handicap accessible cars is the car of the future that won the competition is much better for people that have difficulty moving around, but they're not wheelchair accessible. But there are a lot of people who have trouble getting in and out of cars and that sort of thing and reaching up to pay, and for them, it's a much better car. If you want to make a cab wheelchair accessible, what they do is they cut it down the middle, literally. They stretch it out, they put a new section in the middle and weld it all together. What happens, apparently, is number one, it's more expensive. Number two, it's heavier, so it uses more gas and there's more pollution and more expensive to run. Number three, if you're sitting in the seat, you really have to get up and reach way over to pay the driver. And that's difficult for people who aren't as mobile. But it still would be better for people with wheelchairs. No argument about that. The problem in Manhattan, and in any busy place, other parts of the city where you'd be like downtown Brooklyn, Flushing, and in the middle of the shopping district, going out in the street with a wheelchair in a wheelchair is very hard to flag down a cab. And so it's just not a practical solution. What you want to do is have a system where people in wheelchairs can, on their mobile phones, just go and somebody will come right away and they'll get into a handicap accessible cab. If you make all the cabs accessible, then people who don't need to have a wheelchair, whether they are fully mobile or not, the suspension is a lot worse and it's harder to get up to pay the cab driver and get in and out and that sort of thing. So it sounds like, oh, let's just make everything handicap accessible, wheelchair accessible. That's just not the right answer. But we'll have to see, because the courts may order us to do that. But it has nothing to do with the medallions and getting service to everybody in this city. And it's time to do that and lock that in.
Where is the AccessoRide program in this equation?
It is breaking the budget of the MTA.
It is an MTA product?
I believe, yes, it's an MTA product. Pretty sure of that.
So it's a state.
It's a
cost
it's
the MTA bears.
Sure, yes. Government is paying for it. And AccessoRide's great for some people. It is, in many cases, you'd be better off letting people just call a dial-a-cab.
Right.
It'd be a lot cheaper.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
The trouble is change is always difficult. And there are people that say, oh, it wouldn't be as responsive. The studies show it would make a lot of sense. But, you know, you can only change so many things. First thing, most important thing, is to get this bill passed. You know, if you take a look at the communities around this city, and they generally are communities where poorer people live, they don't have any cab service. And they can't afford automobiles. And how the city has gotten into this situation over decades of the very people that need the service the most, better buses, more subways, and more taxis, don't get any of those. We talk about helping people, and then we don't do it. And this is a chance to do it. It doesn't solve all the problems. Still think the MTA needs a lot more money to expand the bus routes. Probably not going to build that many more subways, but some of them, like the number 7 line, you can get done. I don't know what's happening with the 2nd Avenue subway with the MTA's new budget problems, but whatever.
Moses started that, you know.
No, I think he took the one section that was open. I think it was done before him.
Oh, my goodness. That thing just goes back forever.
But you know, the handicap issue is a totally separate issue, and people that want to tie it together are just doing it because they it's a handful of people in the taxi industry that don't want more medallions, except that the market's telling them, if you saw the $1 million trades, that there's still plenty of business there, and if they overplay their hand and the courts rule that they all have to be handicap accessible, then they're going to have a bigger problem. Fewer people may use cabs because they are less, the suspension's worse. And I think you're going to see suits about people getting up, trying to get to the front of the, across the divide. You know, there's so much mm-hmm. more space between the back seat and the divider. You're going to have people getting hurt. It's no easy answers. And we've come up with a rational solution and why the federal government's, and it's always somebody says, oh no, everything has to be handicap accessible or wheelchair accessible. But that's not necessarily what the people that are in wheelchairs need.
The more I read about what Judge Garofalo is doing with the FDNY testing thing, he is now choosing monitors. It seems to me that the city is almost losing control, that the fire department's losing control of this.
Because we're going to be in court for a long time, I don't like to duck any questions. I've said my piece. I thought that Nick Scapetta and now Sal Cassano have worked with enormous number of volunteers, and people have given us money and space and time. We've worked very hard to make sure everybody knows this is a job that's a great job. In fact, at the latest list, the list is very diverse. You do want a test that gets the best and the brightest. The judge would say, well, it has to be germane. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that. I think you need the best and the brightest, because in this day and age, with hazmat and more technology, I want the guy coming through that door to rescue my kids and me to be the smartest person we can find, because he or she does not know what's on the other side of that door. And so to say, well, only these skills are important and therefore those should be the only things in the test, to me doesn't make any sense. Now, the judge would argue, look, he didn't write the law. He's interpreting it. Interpretation is a very gives a lot of room, and the city has disagreed with His Honor a number of times, and we've put in names. Other people have put in names, but you're 100% right. We're getting away. This is another case, I think, of we're trying to do the right thing. Sometimes. If you give equal opportunities, sometimes you don't get equal results. But the judge is, we're in court, so let's leave it at that.
All right, fair enough. Stop and frisk, another controversial situation. What you and the police commissioner?
Professionals say this is what's keeping guns off the streets or getting some guns off the streets. It's a very effective tool. The police officers are trained when the law lets them stop and frisk and when it doesn't. And I think generally they do a good job. It's impossible to think that every cop every time is going to make a decision that every court is going to find retrospectively when they weren't there acceptable. But it's a very effective tool. It's used in communities where we have lots of guns and lots of murder victims. And we brought crime down another 35% in the last 10 years. We have... I don't think we're going to set a record for low murders, but we'll have the second best year in the history of the city this year. And there's a reason for those things. You know, and this is one of the tactics. People say, oh, you can do it without that. You know, nobody is ever going to want you to, some people don't want you to do anything. And the consequences of that are a society that you can't live in. We used to have that in this city. We had 2,200 murders one year. Now we have just over 500. Just think about the difference with a bigger population.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've got some folks on the phone that want to ask you some questions. We will get to those. On line four right here, that is Phil. Phil, you got the mayor. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have an idea of saving money for New York City.
Great.
And labor.
Love it.
Force. Why can't we privatize the sanitation garbage pickup and we can reduce all those labor costs?
Phil, we do, as a matter of fact. 50% of all the 22,000 tons of solid waste a day are hauled away by the private sanitation companies. They do commercial and industrial, and then the city does residential. And I did do a study one time. It's a little bit hard to compare the two because the city has to plow the streets and do the baskets at the corner and that sort of thing and sweep the streets. But fundamentally, it looked pretty close. It was surprisingly close, the cost for the private versus
and
the
And then
public.
You lose control of the cost as well.
Well, there's also that. There's also that. But it's a good idea, and we're doing it, really, if
All
you
right,
think about it, 50%.
Thank you, Phil. Ernest, you got the mayor. Go ahead. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My question to you is, the tolls for these trucks on the George Washington Bridge are exorbitantly high. After you make your quota, are you going to reduce the tolls and bring them back down to where they were?
Number one, I don't have a lot to do with it. The GW is a owned by the state, Port Authority.
Port Authority.
They've got lots of projects. They need money to do the projects. People want them to build things, and they've got to get the money from someplace. I don't know. There have been talk of them having different rates for different times of the day and that sort of thing. But, you know, they were in the process of raising tolls, and they still are going to have a budget, a problem with their capital budget and not being able to do a lot of the things that everybody's screaming, we want this, and somebody's got to pay for it. In the case of the Port Authority, it's tolls.
All right, thank you, Ernest. Let's go to Lewis on line six. Go ahead, Lewis.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, Mr. Gambling. Mr. Mayor, I've admired and appreciated your efforts running and being at the helm of this city for all the years you've been here. However, I've got to state that what's occurring down at Zuccotti Park, I believe that part of its birth and its continuation fall on your shoulders. And I believe that whether or not there's a First Amendment right or not, there's still businesses downtown. There are communities downtown.
Lewis, I couldn't agree more. You're 100% right, and we're trying to find a balance and also something that's legal. What the courts say right now is that Zuccotti Park is not a public park. It's a private piece of property. They have to have it open 24/7 to anybody that wants to go in there by their agreement with the city, which we can't change. They can have reasonable rules, but until they tell us that they have the rules in place and that nobody's following them, there's limited things we can do. Now, we're trying to find solutions to all the problems, and I'm not trying to duck it. It is the city's problem, and we'll make a decision. But, you know, it's just not so easy. You can't just walk in and say, hey, you're out of here. And then there's the problem of, if they're out of there, where do they go? And, you know, because some of these protesters want to make a statement, and there'll be more people. Now, what they've done so far is when they've marched from one place to another, they have done it peacefully. They've done it on the sidewalk, sometimes without a permit. We will start enforcing that more. But as long as they obey the rules, the city just, you know, you can argue you don't like the First Amendment, although I would argue it protects all of us. But it is what it is, Lewis, and we'll eventually figure out a ways to let people protest without infringing those who don't want to protest. And you're 100% right. There are businesses and people are going to work and going to school. There's drumming in the middle of the night. There's people using the streets as bathrooms.
It's a tourist attraction.
Don't ask for something you don't want. You might get it. And that's one of the problems.
You got a tweet there?
Well, there's one from Ricardo Gonzalez. And he says, how's your Spanish?
My Spanish is non-existent.
We got a few seconds here. Si hay una reforma migratoria integral como propuesta comercial que genera negocio, la apoyaría. And that means is, would I support a comprehensive immigration reform that based on commerce that would generate business? I've been screaming for that again and again and again. We need migrant workers for the farms, period. Nobody else is going to take those jobs. It's just every time we find a lot of the farms are moving out of the country because they just can't get anybody to pick the crops. We need engineers and doctors and people from around the world. And, you know.
It seemed, you know, you and I have, for the past, I guess, how long have we been doing this? Almost 9 years,
yeah.
I guess. We have always talked about immigration. And even though we disagree to on certain levels.
Well, you have a right to be wrong.
No, I understand that. You keep reminding me that. But we agree, actually, on the ease of fixing the problem. Yet, unfortunately, we just never
see. Neither side of the aisle and neither end of Pennsylvania Avenue. They just don't have the courage to stand up to a handful of people that forgot what built this country.
Always enjoy it. We'll see you next Friday.
Looking
Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much. Have yourself a good weekend. We've got more to